Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. This is our Cybersecurity Sunday version, and we hope that you enjoy the content today. We've had more than a few calls or communications, let's say, some text, a couple emails about the new format on the Sunday show, where we're talking cybersecurity with a cybersecurity expert, Mr. Nguyen, who I've known for, I don't know, it pains me to say, it's been at least, 35 years or more?
At least.
So
too long.
Yeah, too long. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But anyway, Nguyen, I'll let you go ahead and tell us what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, there's so many things happening right now. We live in a very dangerous world, you know. So today I want to dive into the SIM swapping. And you probably heard of the term. Well, a lot of people heard of it, but they don't understand what it is. So I want to use the definition in layman's term. What is SIM swapping, okay? SIM swap is a type of scam where the hacker tricks a phone company into switching a person's phone number over to a SIM card that the hacker owns. So once the switch is made, the hacker can receive all the calls and the texts meant for the victim.
The OTPs.
Mm-hmm.
Including
those that are used for security check, which you just mentioned. So this can allow the hacker to access the victim's bank's account, social media, and other sensitive services that use the phone number for security verification.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that little promo. We're continuing to promote our Sunday cybersecurity show with Mr. Nguyen, our expert. And that was a clip from, let's say, I believe two Sundays ago. But in any event, we will be here Sunday. And artificial intelligence is our current focus. It's pretty much permeated every sector of society, it seems like now, or industry. So anyway. Okay, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we will circle back here momentarily with more Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like with big dreams and faded tears.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And before we get started with the this week's content, tax rules, tax strategies, real estate opportunities, etc., want to remind you that just because you hear something on today's show or otherwise on our websites, etc., please check with your existing advisors before you take any actions. And what you hear, as with most such information, may or may not be an appropriate strategy or investment opportunity for you, but it very well may be, pending your advisor's review. One thing I wanted to spend a little time with here at the outset today is, you know, the IRS generally provides disaster relief when a certain geographical area of the country has storms or hurricanes or flash flooding, hail storms, go down the list. And the recent, you know, we got hit several times. You know, I think the first one that we got an extended deadline for multiple items. I'm going to go through those items, but we had a extended deadline until I believe it was either late July. No, it probably would have been early September. And then, I'm getting confused. I'm not looking at the actual release. I probably should. We had a extension of time until November 2nd, I believe it was, and that was just from the first flash flooding that we have. And I can't remember exactly when, but it wasn't when we had the significant power outage. So it was before that one. We had a lot of flooding. So that got us an extension of time for taking certain actions, which I'll, again, go through here momentarily, to November 2nd. And then once we had the second round or last round of disaster where the power was off for, you know, I don't know, 10 to 13 or 14 days for some folks, and then we had Hurricane Beryl. That has gotten us a further extension of time out to February 2nd of next year. And so to, let's see, and there's several issues here. It's not just the deadline. The deadline for filing or for making estimated payments, et cetera, is nice, but it also has tweaked or given an exception to the casualty loss rules, which as you may or may not know, if you've tried to claim a casualty loss recently that wasn't related to a qualified disaster, you got a 10% of AGI limitation even if you can claim it. And most casualty losses are not deductible if you don't have the benefit of a federally declared disaster zone. And in any event, the waiver of the 10% of AGI limitation is welcomed. That, you know, expands or increases the amount of the loss. And then you've got a casualty loss deduction now that's in addition to the individual standard deduction. So it's not just the deadlines. And, you know, if you look back in time, a major disaster declared by the president under Section 401 of the Stafford Act, this was 2016 legislation, covered things like Hurricane Harvey, Tropical Storm Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Maria, the California wildfires in 2017 and January of 2018, and so on. And so in any event, moving closer to home, the Houston April 2024 tornadoes and Hurricane Beryl occurred after the window for the special rules. Therefore, the losses of these weather events do not meet the disaster definition of qualified disaster loss. As a result, taxpayers with losses from the Houston April 24th tornadoes and Hurricane Beryl are currently subject to less favorable tax treatment, including the inability to deduct casualty losses that do not exceed 10% of AGI. So clarification on the rule. I think I know I've had clients call and they seem to think that the 10% of AGI limit that's applied in the past, removing that impediment, they didn't realize is not going to happen with respect to the Houston scenario. There likely will still be legislation to grant those special rules. I'm not certain the current status, but I know there's efforts being made by the Texas contingent, especially the Houston congressman, and I guess the two state our senators in the U.S. Senate. But in any event, so we get the ability to extend making our payments for estimated tax, as well as certain deadlines that might pop up. For instance, the funding 401 or a solo K plan based on you having filed an extension of your return involved for that activity also gets extended out to February 2nd of 2025. It's a nice perk, but anyway, let's see. I wanted to bring up, I hate to get into the political nature of some of the tax and deficit nonsense that's being bannered about now. I've seen just the portions, clips, if you will, of Senator Harris's interview, quote unquote, yesterday, and you know, I don't know where to grab on. I mean, I'd like to say I know what she's proposing, but the reality is we don't. And I don't think, I mean, I everything I hear seems to be economic illiteracy. I mean, there's no understanding of what the current rules are, what the current deficit is, how we're going to pay for the assorted goodies that are being passed out. And it's not just on Senator Harris's side, or I'm sorry, Vice President Harris's side. It seems like now we're in a free-for-all to throw money at voters, because all, you know, both sides, all the constituents here involved want the money or need the vote. One of the two, you know, seems to be the folks that are being heard. And, you know, I appreciate all the efforts to stimulate the economy or to reduce inflation. But if they haven't learned anything just in the last 3.5 years, forget about the history of the world. That's another thing that would defeat many of these proposals in terms of throwing money at things. I don't know, but one of the most troubling, I don't want to call it a plank, I don't know if it rises to the level of a plank in the Democratic platform, but the notion, the idea, if I can borrow a word from Mr. Biden, the idea that we would think of taxing unrealized gains is just, it's insanity. And for those of you that may not be aware, and I don't think we truly know the depths of where they would stop if they ever start taxing unrealized gains. I can guess that eventually at some point they would literally make taxpayers over a certain level of income or maybe a certain level of wealth annually mark to market their investments. And, you know, how much of a gain, how much appreciation do we have so far? I know when the Build Back Better Act was being kicked around, man, it's hard to believe. It's been, we're coming up on 3 years? I can't remember if it was the end of 2020 maybe, or 2021. I think it may have been 2021. There was an attempt. I mean, of course, Build Back Better, thank goodness, didn't pass, but it had a provision that would have taxed one's estate without allowing without the asset having been transacted. So in other words, you could pass away, you have an asset, let's say you had an apartment building that you paid $2 million for, and the estimated fair market value at the time of passing is $5 million. Well, under today's law, you could pass that asset to heirs in most cases, and there'd be no tax paid. Now, and moreover, your basis, that your go-forward basis as the owner, if you were the heir, would now go up to $5 million, if that was the fair market value at the date of passing. But you'd be, and you would not be paying tax. Well, under the unrealized gain theory or logic or concept, you would pay tax on the $3 million excess of that asset value. And that was pretty much, I think, the focus, if I recall, and it's been a while, was the unrealized gains upon a deceased passing. I think now what they're really hoping to accomplish is to tax, and maybe it'll just happen at the billionaire level. For now, you don't think it's going to move downstream once they get everybody comfortable that, you know, look at, and I don't know how much revenue it could possibly raise. I would tell you, based on numbers I've seen in the recent past, it would barely move the needle on paying down our current debt. And by the way, when's the last time you saw Congress pay down debt? And I'll tell you, you may not have realized it, but during the Clinton era, when you had Newt Gingrich, Speaker of the House, they actually, via the Contract with America, I believe they called it, they did reduce the deficit. And I don't know that there were actual reduction in the cumulative debt. I believe there was, just briefly, maybe 1 year, 2 years. But the bottom line is Congress generally finds a way, or the president, you know, look at Mr. Biden, they find ways to spend whatever, either savings or additional revenues that are collected because of changing the tax rules. And, you know, when you see the Democrats refer to tax cuts as only being for the wealthy, that's nonsense, because most tax cuts, believe it or not, generate more revenues because it stimulates activity. People sell investments to capture the lower rate, and that brings money in for the Treasury. But if it gets spent again, it doesn't help in terms of lowering the deficit. And the deficit, as you know, is insanely high, and there's no end in sight. The latest Congressional Budget Office 10-year forecast has the debt going up to about $54+ trillion. The annual deficits are projected to be in the $2 trillion a year range, and interest for the first time has surpassed defense spending as the third most prolific component of the annual federal expenditure. And by the end of by the end of the 10-year look forward, 2034, interest will be the number one expenditure in the federal deficit, pending the intestinal fortitude of Congress to put, you know, some new rules in place. And I'm sure it's going to involve raising taxes. You know, Congressional Budget Office is now singing the tune that instead of the 150% increase in tax rates they projected back in 2009 as the way to fix the deficit, it's closer now to 200%. So, again, I'm going to repeat something I've talked about, I don't know, 100 times on the air over the last 3 years, almost 4 years now. If you've got pre-tax retirement funds that are going to be subject to required minimum distributions, in other words, you don't control when you take them. I mean, you do within the context of a 12-month year, but otherwise, once you hit, depending on when you were born, the trigger age is what I would call it, you've got to take out a predefined, I mean, there's a table, you go look at it, and you determine the amount you have to take out. It's not like you decide, oh, well, I need $80,000 this year to live. Well, that's not how you determine your required minimum distribution. And the problem is if you've never converted to Roth, well, if you've never contributed by the Roth option, and or you've never converted pre-tax contributions to Roth, then you're going to get hit at whatever the current ordinary income tax rate is out over the rest of your life. And when you look at the difference between converting to Roth now, and of course you have to make assumptions. With most of my clients, the assumptions get a little bit easier because most are invested in real estate private partnership syndications. You hear us talk about those creatures week in and week out. And as such, they are subject to private company discounts when you look at converting to Roth. So the way that it occurs is you look at your holdings and you apply discounts for things like lack of marketability, lack of voting control, and assorted, 20 or so other risk factors that are identified in every PPM or private placement memorandum that you will be given before you invest in a given project. And you know, the core discounts are pretty much the same on every multifamily syndication. There are some differences when you get further down the list. And, you know, each one of those are risk factors for the most part that you don't have if you simply leave your money in Fidelity or Schwab and, you know, you're buying market-based investments that, you know, are traded. So there is no lack of marketability. You have the ability as a vote to remove the board, as an example. So you do have some voting ability. You're not subject to whims in the real estate market or the lending market. Have you checked recently with your lead partner, if you're an investor in real estate multifamily syndications, I'm sure you've heard, you've probably read emails that you get from the lead partners about how difficult it is, and it's going to continue to be for at least a year or two, to refinance existing debt. And if you're on the doorstep of a three-year refinance mandate that you got when you borrowed money on a bridge loan, you know, a couple years ago, that'll be coming due in 2025. There's a lot of those loan structures that are going to be coming due for either a refinance or to be paid off or to be extended at 1% of the balances, assuming the lender will approve it. So it's not certain. And the market has some rough sledding ahead. Even if the Fed starts reducing interest rates now, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be enough lenders with enough funding to step in and refinance those loans. And if you haven't executed the business proposition or the business plan successfully at this point, you got a problem, and you'll have to potentially, I suppose, recapitalize with some new investors coming into the deal, which will likely dilute the existing partner's interest. We're already seeing that happen, and I guess that's a better outcome potentially than not taking in new investors. I know I've seen a raft of deals that have cash calls, and those are kind of dicey. I know some prognosticators in this space, the private partnership multifamily syndication arena, just rebel against the concept of making a cash call or putting more money into a deal. I'll tell you, it depends. I mean, if you ask me, I'll ask you for certain information where we can try to recast the future outcome to figure out, well, is it a good return on your investment from this point forward? I mean, that's kind of what you have to look at. And of course, you're always trying to preserve the capital that you've already got in play. So in any event, but backing up just momentarily to the Roth concept, if you still have money in pre-tax accounts for your retirement, think about, just for feasibility, consider that you might be in as high as a 50% tax bracket in retirement, because the rates are going to go up. And by the way, retirement, quote unquote, is a long time for most of us folks. You know, the IRS's life expectancy tables have males at 85 to 86 years old in terms of expectations, and females are 87 to 88. That's a long time to pay the bills every month when you're not working and have a paycheck coming in. And so there's some navigation that has to take place for you to invest in the right types of transactions with the right pro forma and the right business plan that's going to have those dollars, those cash flow distributions coming out in a timely fashion so that you're able to sustain your living expenses. And you don't just invest blindly thinking, oh, well, I've invested with this lead partner, this syndicator, six times before. I trust him or her and move forward. You really need to look hard at what are the anticipated cash flows, just at a high level, perhaps, by year. If I put $100,000 into this transaction, what's the next 10 years look like in terms of pro forma projections? Year one, year two, year three, when does it refinance? And I get a slug of my original capital back? Or when do we have to sell it? Because in the current modus operandi, when are we going to have to sell it because we can't refinance it? And do I get anything back? There's a lot of transactions right at the moment that are getting none of the investor capital back. And that opens up a whole nother can of worms and discussion, which we won't go into at the moment. But who's on the hook for that debt? And you shouldn't be. If you're being asked to sign a guarantee for a debt on a property that you own less than 1% of because you're a passive capital partner, I'm just telling you right now, don't do it. There's not a deal in the world that I would tell you to take that risk of signing a personal guarantee unless possibly if you're the one driving the wagon, you're the one that's making the decisions, and you've got significant other funds on your balance sheet, well, then maybe you can provide that type of guarantee. But in any event, it's a little bit more complicated than it looks. And I know a lot of the investor / mentor platforms, they make it sound like, oh, this is everything we touch turns to gold. We don't ever have bad deals. Well, I can tell you, having reviewed many, many transactions across many platforms, all of the ones that you would have heard of if you just listened to radio, especially local radio, there are deals that have collapsed. People lost their money. And there's others that have been successful. People made their money back plus a nice profit. And there's deals that are still to come that will fail and some will be successful. How do you tell the difference? And nobody has a magic wand to wave over the transaction, but there's things you can do on the front end before you ever give anybody your money to try to ferret out where possible either bad actors or bad assumption sets, bad forecasts are in play. And you want to stay away from those, obviously, and we can help you do that. We don't sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, lead partners, syndicators, etc. We try to assist with your understanding of what you're signing up for regarding any opportunity that you may be considering. And we will show you how to evaluate the sponsors, the lead partners, the opportunities, and the private placement offerings so you can try to select projects that have a higher likelihood of a favorable outcome. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our second break, and we shall return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones are made of my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that you tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And again, I just want to mention our Sunday show, cybersecurity show. We've started talking more about artificial intelligence. We're going to continue to do segments in that space. And then ransomware has become a huge issue. We've had some recent large-scale attacks. And the other thing that we are trying to help people deal with in their own personal computing arena is the data breaches that have occurred lately with National Public Data, and I believe Change Data is the second one that's exposed literally billions of people's financial records, including their Social Security number. And if you don't have your credit frozen, you're not paying attention, or you just don't understand how exposed you might be. And I understand, you know, 3 billion people can't be attacked all at once, but you know, this data gets offered for sale. And so by the time you have more than a few people pay for it that are bad actors and want to go take out new credit cards or credit lines in your name using your persona or open cell phone accounts, you know, there's just a number of ways that your data can be used, provided someone has the goods on you. They've got your social, they've got your name and address, and you know, I'm not sure what else. If you Google national public data breach, you'll find more than a few articles that discuss what got breached. But in any event, we've got a cybersecurity expert, Mr. Win Nguyen is his name, and it's a real name, a Vietnamese name. But I think you'll enjoy listening, and it is a totally different area of content than what we normally would talk about. But I know I myself have learned a lot just being in the way here. You know, I mean, I enjoy doing the Sunday show. It's interesting to see how other professionals deal with some of these current moment events going on around the world and in the world. And it's just amazing. But anyway, I want to talk for just a moment. We've got about 10 minutes left about, because I had two calls this week from people that said, well, you know, I've got single family houses, and you know, one gentleman was in his 70s and had worked at a large telecommunications company, is how I would describe him. And you know, he had, I think he said, 7 or 8 single family rental properties. And I just casually mentioned, well, have you taken a look at you know, small apartments, small multifamily? And he said, well, you know, I thought about it at one point. I actually inquired about a couple, but he said, I just, you know, I couldn't quite get there on the comfort factor. And he said, you know, with a single family house, you know, you've kind of got containment on issues. You know, you don't have to worry about necessarily an issue that might affect the whole property. Like, for instance, I know we've done roof replacements on our buildings in the recent past. We also had a significant foundation expenditure. And, you know, there's something a little bit more comforting, I think, for most people, if that's a single family property. But you know, when you multiply it by 7, I'll take an 8-unit apartment building any day of the week. Not only that, there's other issues that the close proximity of those units. Now, we could quibble over whether an 8-unit or 100-unit makes more sense. I can see arguments both ways. It depends on your business model, depends on your location, depends on the type of rents and tenants that you can attract. But I would just say, as a matter of course, I would take an 8-unit apartment building over 8 individual single-family properties that are not located in close proximity. And but the reason we like apartments more so than single family, as I explained to this gentleman, I said, well, let's talk about your properties. Pick your best property, you know, that one house, and tell me more about it. Tell me where it's located, how long you've owned it, any special neighborhood-centric issues, you know, like are you on a major transportation artery? Are you close to a school? You know, you could go down a list of things that could prove to be either helpful or unhelpful. And he had what I would say are fairly normal. He wasn't in River Oaks, and he wasn't in Houston for that matter, but he was in what I would call workforce housing properties. Okay, they're two, maybe single story, I think the two that he brought up were. And I said, well, let's talk about your exit on those properties. I said, when you sell it, how much do you think you're going to be able to sell it for? I was looking for a general answer. He gave me a specific answer and in dollars. And basically, he felt like over, you know, 20 years, he would double what he paid for it. And I wouldn't dispute that. I mean, I've seen that happen more than a few times, a lot of times. So I would say, okay, well, that might be right. But I said, what I'm looking at is how will the value be determined that you sell at? And he said, well, you know, I'll ask a realtor for a comp. I said, okay, now we're getting somewhere. And I said, and what do you think that comp will be reflective of? And he said, well, it's going to be what other people have sold their homes for recently in my neighborhood. I said, exactly. And that's your top end on a single-family property. You didn't tell me it was going to be based on how clean your pool was, or even if you had a pool, or when you had replaced your roof last, or you go down the list of things that are more emotional, perhaps, than the way we value apartments. And he said, well, how would you value an apartment? Because he had never owned one. And I said, well, you have an income stream. We call it NOI. It stands for net operating income. And the property will be marketed at a price that reflects essentially the discounted cash flows coming to the bottom line on that rental property. And an investor will be looking for a cap rate that allows them to make a certain return on their investment. And generally, as interest rates go up, and this is part of the problem we have right now with all these transactions needing to refinance, interest rates have gone up, which you can say it's an indirect relationship, if you will, but I tell you what, there's a pretty darn close correlation. As interest rates go up or down, cap rates go up and down. And cap rates move in sync for the most part, maybe not simultaneously in sync, but they're connected to interest rates. So as the interest rate comes down, the cap rate comes down, which means the property has become more valuable in terms of trading it or selling it, as the case may be. And in any event, the ability for us to buy a beat-up older property, an apartment building, renovate it, raise our rents, and get a higher sales price than maybe a comp might give you. You know, if you looked at the physical type property, you might compare an 8-unit in one part of town to an 8-unit in the same part of town, and the one that's got the higher proven cash flow or net operating income is going to sell for a higher price. And it really doesn't have a whole lot to do with what the last 8 units sold for 2 weeks ago. And so that's the difference. You know, the valuation returns are significantly more opportunistic with a multifamily. It's like valuing a business that's got an earnings stream. We typically, with a normal trader business, we refer to EBITDA, and that earnings stream is what someone's buying. They're not buying, to a certain extent, they're not buying location, they're not buying the fact that a school's next door, but all of those items go into that attractiveness of the property that allows a higher rate of rent to be charged, which in turn feeds the net operating income at the bottom. And the problem we've had recently in the multifamily market, and I mean the commercial office building market is even worse, is that with vacancy, you can pretty much rest assured the net operating income has gone way down. And when the net operating income goes down, obviously if you're applying a cap rate, you're multiplying or dividing a cap rate into that, you're going to be dealing with a much lower valuation. And it's a very difficult time for those that didn't project ahead. And, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, I know quality syndicators that have struggled and are not able. I know there's one here in the Dallas market that quality guy has returned money to his investors many times and just sold a property that, if I recall, was anticipated to provide about 35% of the capital back that was originally put in. So there was, as I understand it, and again, I don't know the lead partner. I have a couple clients that are in his transaction, and things happen. And that's why you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, I suggest to people, and these are normal people, you know, that have maybe a couple million dollars in retirement money, and I strongly suggest no more than $100,000 to $200,000 at the most go into any one deal, because, you know, for every deal that you hit a grand slam, you may have a deal that chokes and doesn't return you much, if any. And so then you got all the others in between that are they're the singles and doubles, if we put it in baseball parlance, you'll take, because it's positive forward movement. In any event, we're near the end of the show. I just wanted to mention, for those of you that don't have advisors, if you're interested in working with someone like us, go to our website, baplannershow.com, fill out the form, Form 1, and then schedule a call. You'll see that link right there next to the forms link, and we'll be happy to at least review your input on the form and have a discussion with you about how we might be able to help you achieve your wealth goals. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you can join us Sunday again for the Cyber Security Sunday Show. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.